and they had never seen snow before. So then one of them was interested in drafting, designing, and that sort of thing. And my son was at school, and he had a drafting board in the basement. And we had a superintendent of the schools here, and the one's wife was a teacher, and so we all paired off. And oh, that snow was something. But I said, well, we can't send these people home now. It's almost supper time. So in the meantime, they were down in our basement. Claire had done a lot of canned goods. We had peaches and pears and all kinds of stuff. And they were flabbergasted that we did those things. They thought you just bought those things in a store. So then they got to know Claire very, very well. And so we invited them for supper. So Claire showed them all her condiments, and they're trying to figure out, they would sniff them, you know. Oh, yes, I know that. And so we did that two Sundays. And then we had a group from Iran that came also. They were real nice, and we did the same thing for them. But we never mentioned it down at the arsenal. I don't know whether we were outside of our what we should have been doing, but we did it anyway. We did what we thought was right. So anyway, just about that time, on December 10th, 1962, here, you read.
December 10th, 1962, I was assigned to the U.S. Defense Production Team mission to India.
That was a secret mission at the time.
The team was composed as follows. Team Chief Carol H. Staley, S-T-A-L-E-Y. Chief Engineer, Picatinny Arsenal. General J.R. Hines, H-I-N-D-S, retired Defense Supply Agency. Edward R. Market, yourself, Industrial Engineer, Springfield Armory. Anthony Chismark, C-H-I-S-M-A-R-K, Ammo Specialist, Waterfleet Arsenal. Salvatore Norod, N-O-R-O-D, Industrial Engineer, Loading, Picatinny Arsenal. George A. Ripka, R-I-P-K-A, Production Engineer, Frankfurt Arsenal. Theodore M. Douglas, Vice President, IT&T, East Orange, New Jersey. Dr. George Rosen, General Advisor, Overall Economy, the RAND Corporation, Santa Monica, California. Brigadier General Sidney R. Hines, retired. Inspector General Administrator, U.S. Supply Agency. Lieutenant Colonel Horace A. Dunn. Army Maintenance Board, Fort Knox. Robert O. Brandon, Automotive Specialist, U.S. Supply Center, Detroit, Michigan. Dr. Stephen J. Kennedy, Clothing and Organic Materials Engineer, U.S. Army, Material Command, Natick, Mass. And Arlene M. Jensen, Secretary. When the Chinese invaded Tibet, the Indian government became alarmed and requested help from the British and American governments in the fall of 1962. Boy, that's quite a roster of people.
And then as a result of that, the President of the United States and the Prime Minister McMillan from Great Britain met in Nassau, and they set up a team, the British did, and that's our team was, but the British team went ahead of our team. When we went, we traveled to Great Britain, and our office was in the embassy in London. And we had met various officials from the British government and talked about what they had found over there. Their team had already come back. But they weren't particularly well liked in India. Fact is, the British oh, they just didn't even like the word British, you know. But anyway...
Too much history.
They were kind of stiff and formal, you know. So when we got to India, we put up in we were put up in the embassy there in New Delhi, and we stayed at the Ashoka Hotel here in India. When we arrived there, we had flown from London, stopped in Frankfurt, and then in Munich, and then in Turkey, and Beirut, and Tehran, and then over into India. And that was a long flight. It was propeller driven. They weren't jets. So when we got to India, it was about 6 o'clock in the morning, and we were tired and dirty and grubby, and we were taken to the hotel, get a chance to get cleaned up, and we were instructed never to take any of their water out of the faucet and put it into our mouths. So first thing I wanted to do was brush my teeth. I felt as if I hadn't brushed them in 6 months. Well, anyway, what are you going to do? So I had a bottle of scotch with me. So the thing I did was brush my teeth with scotch. And then, of course, I had to spit it out. That was the toughest part of it, getting rid of it.
Beautiful stuff.
But then we were established at the embassy. We were on the second floor. I have pictures of it here, if you're interested.
Yes.
This is the embassy building. And our offices were on the second floor. This is the courtyard inside of the building itself. Everything was very airy and open, beautiful.
Lovely courtyard.
So our meeting was at 10 o'clock, so we had no sleep. We were dirty. But anyway, we went right over to the Ministry of Economics and met all of their people on the money side of things, and then we were taken to the Ministry of Defense. And
this is February 3rd, 1943.
Yeah.
1963, excuse me.
63. These are just interesting. This is the Parliament House there, and this is the gardens and back of the Presidential Palace, which, and then the Red Fort, and Mahatma Gandhi's Samadhi, and
burial place.
So I'm making four copies of all of this stuff, and the Ministry of Economics, and this is the Ministry of Defense. Well, when we got there, the embassy people came with us. Oh, shucks, we had every top big wig you can imagine. So we got to the Ministry of Defense and started talking about our project, what they wanted to do and how to go about it. But every word was being weighed. No, you know, diplomatic. They didn't want to say anything that somebody could pick up. So finally, the captain of our team got up and said, look, we are not politicians. We are not diplomats. We're here to do a job, and if we have to weigh our words like you're weighing them here now, we might as well go right back home now, because we aren't that kind of people. So then we went back for lunch, and we had a date to go back for about 2 o'clock. So the Indians, they thought that was the best thing ever. So when we got back, they had everything out. Secret, top secret, and we went through. And so we told them, said, look, we will talk about these things, and if we see something that we don't think is quite the way it should be, we're going to tell you about it. But if you get so that you don't want to listen to it, we won't do it. But you'll take it, but we will not criticize anything unless we had an answer or a better way of doing it. So the highest ranking man there was Admiral Shankar, S-H-A-N-K-A-R, as I remember. And he was a down-to-earth person. So that afternoon, they asked us if we would travel all around the military or the manufacturing places here in India. So they said they made arrangements in the personal plane, which happened to be a DC-3, the Minister of Defense was assigned to our team. So we flew from New Delhi. First stop was Kanpur, and General Hines and I were assigned to one plant, or machine guns, and some of the others went to metal plants of one kind or another, but the team was spread out to their various specialties. And then we flew into Calcutta, and the poverty that we saw is unbelievable. You can't describe it. There's nothing in the world. The Middle East is bad, but that was, we weren't prepared for it. Well, anyway, we've arrived there about 11 o'clock. We hadn't eaten our evening meal yet. And when we got there, I must have pictures of it here. In order to get into the hotel, people were sleeping on the sidewalk, and we would have to, here it is, right here, pictures of it. Sleeping on the street.
Home, street, home.
Home,
this is the scene when we arrived at the Great Eastern Hotel. It was necessary to step over these people to get into the hotel. I never thought that I would see poverty such as this. Oh my gosh, you've got children and all kinds of...
Oh, yes. We took our suitcases and we would step over father, mother, and the kids and go in. And then here's
Calcutta and Cowles. This is from the Utica Observer Dispatch, Sunday, April 28, 1963.
And we saw all of that.
They went out for dinner, a Calcutta family sifting garbage for food.
Yeah. And they had to get there before the water buffaloes and the goats would eat it. And here's sanitary conditions.
The outdoor urinals.
And the girls did all heavy manual work. Carried the stuff in baskets on their heads, trap rock, name it. And
we discussed this low wage and suggested they were paid more. These people could then purchase some of their necessities, and this in turn would stimulate their economy. They told us the average income had risen from $60 per person per year.
Per year.
To $70. We also learned the average span of life in India rose from 28 years to 30 years of age. The birth rate was very high and increasing. Population of India was 450 million people. The area of India is about one-third that of the United States.
And if a family couldn't afford to raise their children, they would abandon the girls. They would do anything under creation to try to save the boys. And then these girls that were doing this heavy work, I asked, how much do you pay them? Well, they get paid one bowl of rice a day. And if it was a real good day, they would get some gruel on the rice. So that's when I got straight from the shoulder. I said, how do you expect to ever help your people along? If you don't pay them, they can't spend anything, and you can't start this thing going along. But uh, where did you come from? And then, well, anyway, when we arrived there in OAS, we were always met by cars to take us to the various installations and to the hotel. So everybody, not everybody, but it seemed everybody wanted to be in the first car. That's where General Hines was. I said, no, I don't want to be in that car. I want to be, they had a station wagon generally that was on the tail end of the troop. And one of them that was heading up the group as we traveled was a colonel in the Savant, as I remember his name. He was sitting on the front seat. And then there was another man that sat beside me, and he was one of the Indians. His skin was almost black. The people in India that are black are not Negroes. They are still Caucasian. And they are not bashful of letting you know about it. But I said, I want to ride in that car because I want to learn about India. So who can I learn from better than from Indians? So we got into Calcutta that night, as I say, about 11 o'clock. And I couldn't say this fellow's name, so I called him Samba. And oh, he thought that was great. And he always was carrying a black briefcase. I didn't, none of my business what he was carrying that briefcase. But that night, he said, Ed, I haven't been to Calcutta in a long time. I have some friends I want to go visiting. So he said, I won't eat with the group tonight. I'll see you later. So we had our meal at midnight. And of course, after a heavy meal, I couldn't sleep, so I sat in the lobby, or we did, all of us, until we got settled. Pretty soon, Samba comes in, and the boys had him well liquored up, and he had rubber knees under him. So everybody ignored him, and I said, oh, no, come on, Samba. I got him up to his room and into a bed and organized, so never said anything more about it. The next day, I had to go to the small arms plant, which was up in Ishapur, north of Bombay, Calcutta, about 30, 35 miles, which was one of the main manufacturing plants when the British were there.
Ishapur, ISH?
Got to show you something here. You're a privileged character. I don't put it up because it's so fragile and people would handle it.
Oh, look at that.
That's a model of the gun that I helped him with.
That is beautiful. How long is this? It's not very big.
Here you can...
Oh, it has its own rack.
Oh, yes. And it came to me a year afterwards. That came to me. And here's the rifle factory.
Rifle factory and chief inspector of small arms, Ishapur, I-C-H-A-P-U-R. Oh, that's a beautiful little thing.
That came a year afterwards. I was supposed to go back again a year afterwards, but as I say, armory was phasing out and I was in trouble. So I didn't get shipped back.
Gorgeous little model. It's just beautiful.
So they sent this to me.
And that's a model of what weapon?
I have written it down here, but it's the one that their version of like the M14. And
like the cartridge clip, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I won't leave it out. It's so fragile. I'm afraid somebody would break it, and it's irreplaceable.
I should think. That's
and this box is the way it came. Cut it out and, oh, I prize that so highly.
I should think you would. That is gorgeous. What a lovely little tribute.
But anyway, we went to the plant, and we were going to have a meeting that morning, which we did have, actually. And we went in, and Admiral Shankar was with us that day. He didn't travel with us all through, but sometimes he would drop in on us. But he came, and they were showing us all sorts of charts. Production, and this is what they had, and their scrap rate, and the rejection rate was this, that, or the other thing. Oh, it was a rosy picture. So I says, Admiral, how about you and me go for a walk out in the plant? And he says, why? Why do you want to go in the plant? I says, I don't believe what I'm seeing. So the two of us went out into the plant, and as I always did when I was in the plant, I would look out for something that was out of the ordinary, because those are trouble spots. So we would find, here's some stuff packed up here, piled up, have dust on it and all that sort of thing covered, call a foreman over, what's this stuff here? Well, it's stuff that isn't just as it should be, but we're hoping to be able to do something with it. So he says, has that been recorded? Oh no, that's not recorded, see. So a number of those things, and then okay, we went out to the testing range, which was over, well, the man in charge of it was a major in the Indian Army. And, he was very proud of his range, and he should have been, because it was a good job. But these machine guns, they were testing them on a 45-degree depressed angle into water, which is a good stopper for projectiles. And then they had a range for the horizontal testing, function testing and that sort of thing, shooting into a berm, I don't know, 100 yards or whatever. And so I asked this major, says, what's over in back of that berm? And he says, oh, that's the village. Well, I says, how many people have you killed? I said, what do you mean? There's no baffle over these weapons. If you're off on the slightest angle, those projectiles are going over into the village. Never thought of it, see? Everything, if it's perfect, the butt was just right, see? Okay, so then we went to see the where they were testing them on the 45-degree raised angle. And they were shooting it into a cannon barrel, about 4-inch bore. And they had taken the muzzled end of it and heated it up and bent it over so that the bullets would go up and come down on the 45 again in the water, which is fine. But I says, when's the last time you checked the top of this cannon barrel? Oh, we don't have to worry about that. That's at least 2 inches thick up in that area. So, well, I don't know. So by that time, the Admiral says, well, this is something. So he says, this is Thursday. He says, Ed, how about coming back here on Saturday morning, and I'll have the Chief Inspector, Shahani was his name, for the Indian Army, I'll have him here to go through what you've just gone through with me. So, okay, if that's where you want me, that's where I'll be. So, got there, just arriving, and they were waiting for me at the front door. Mr. Barker, that cannon barrel had a hole through it. Well, I says, I expected that. They erode from these projectiles.
Yeah, sure.
So cut out that section and put in some armor plate and something that you can renew every so often. Now that you know about it, take care of it. So That's one reason that this memento was got. So then we left there, and then we went down to I'm going to show you some of these pictures.
That little model is about 10 inches long, isn't it?
About that.
Yeah. The model of the life.
So, it'll say we were being escorted by this colonel in the Indian Army. So, on the way, we stopped for refueling at the naval base. And we called it Visag for short.
I can
Visakhapatnam.
Visakhapatnam.
Yeah.
That's quite a mouthful.
Oh, that was a... I'll show you some of these things. Oh, yes, when I was at Ishapur, we went to the school here. I've written on back at Calcutta. Apprentice Training School. It was an open building. See, the weather was very moderate.
Jessup's LTD, J-E-S-S-U-P-S.
They were doing some beautiful work on training. And I took this picture to show my son. It's a woodworking shop that I saw. I'm getting ahead of myself here now. Well, anyway, we left there and...
Elliott Beach.
We're getting to those things. We flew into Madras. And we're put up and we were shown around, and we were invited out to a meeting of the equivalent of our Rotary Club here. It just so happened there was a man sitting beside me. I knew that he was American from his talk, so we got talking. What section of the country and what was your schooling? Just so happened he was a graduate from Worcester Tech after I graduated, so we had so much in common. So I learned a lot from him. And in Madras, as we found out later in Calcutta, they had prohibition, liquor prohibition. But it was just as big a farce as it was in this country during the 20s. But in order to, for us, we didn't have time to boil water. So we found out, or I found out rather, from my family physician that when you're in India, drink beer. Because if it has its own test. If you can open it up and it stays clear, it's perfectly safe. If it turns cloudy, throw it out. So we always carried a suitcase full of beer. And so we got permits so that if you drank one bottle of beer a day, you were considered a chronic alcoholic. So these are some of the things. We had to have special permits and all that sort of thing. But
after supper, we were issued permits to consume and possess alcoholic beverages. This state enforced alcoholic prohibition. Any person that consumed one, there it is, considered an alcoholic. Office of the issue, name of the club, Madras. Name of permit holder, Mr. Edward R. Market.
Yeah.
Gee, you didn't know you were an alcoholic, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Anybody, one glass of beer a day is a chronic alcoholic. Now,
good grief, how formal. Permit to consume. Whereas Mr. Edward R. Market, hereinafter called a permit holder, has applied for a permit authorizing him or her to consume and possess for personal consumption liquor subject to the provisions of the Madras Prohibition Act 1937 and the rules and orders made thereunder, including the Madras Liquor License and Permit Rules, 1960, hereinafter referred to as the rules. Boy, is that ever fun.
This is only part of it. There was two whole sheets of it, see? And, you know, 12 and a half by 16.
Real legal document.
Yeah, they were. Well, anyway, the next morning, they said, well, we'd like to take you down to Elliott Beach. So we got up at about 4:30, 5 o'clock. And when we went down, we went by this cathedral, St. Thomas. It supposedly, as rumor has it, that's where he was executed, Doubting Thomas, you remember from the Bible. So then there was a great big engineering college there. And they had some wonderful schools. But then we went down to Elliott Beach for a swim, and we got there at about 6:30 in the morning. And the fishermen were just pulling in nets. So here is a picture of the fishermen and George Ripka, which was part of our team.
I was going to say, one of them
pulling
the
ropes with them, see? And
he looks quite different, this white shirt and slacks.
Yeah, yeah. But he was another real on the way. And then we went to Mahabalipuram
Memorial, east of Madras, on the way to Elliott Beach. Mahalipuram. Boy.
And then we saw this monolith. It's a granite monolith.
Arjuna's Penance.
And we think that Mount Rushmore, or even down in Georgia, the Confederate Mora, are something. But these things were carved on a granite 1,500 years ago.
640 and 674 A.D.
Yeah.
Mahabalipuram.
And it was carved right out of the living stone.
Well, that is impressive.
So we did these things before we got. And then this gives you, this is the temple. If you'll notice here, there's an elephant 14 feet high. It gives you an idea. These are carved out of solid rock.
Just incredible.
And they were realizing that they were losing some of these buildings. So they set up a school for training people to do it the way it was done in those days. And here's a picture of one of the areas. And I have, at the school, they were so pleased that we stopped at the school that each one of us got a little memento. I'll have to show you my little lion. You know, lions in India mean so much to them. Here's another one.
These are fascinating. Best of seven temples located on the seashore. The other six were washed away by the ocean.
Yeah, and they were now trying to save that particular one. Well, then we went to, I'm mentioning here where some of the plants we went to see, what we were able to do. I could mention some of these things, but I think it's getting. And then that brass plate with the inlays that's downstairs. See, we are invited to dinner and appreciation. The
Government of Madras, the members of the U.S. production team, Sri. This is the Minister for Finance, BHAKTAVATSALAM. Request the pleasure of your company at a reception and dinner Wednesday, the 13th of February, 1963 at 7 p.m. the Hotel Connemara, Connemara, Madras. Very nice.
And then after the dinner, we...
A dancer. In costume. Yeah. Look at that elaborate costume.
But, you know, so much of that, if you're not familiar with it, it doesn't mean as much to you as if we had anticipated. We could have studied up on some of it, but after about 2.5 hours, it got quite tiring.
Institute of Classical Dance, NRITYA-KAUSTUBHA, presents Kumari Yamini Krishnamurti, KUMARIYAMINI, KRISHNAMURTI, in a special recital of South Indian classical dances. Very nice. As you say, it could be a tiring after a while.
Oh, we put in long hours, always. Here's here the next major stop was down in Bangalore. One of the most beautiful cities in the world, as far as I'm concerned.
Bangalore.
It used the British headquarters when they were there. And
Hindustan Aircraft Factory, where we were escorted by Mr. M.K.M.A.T.H.U.L.L.A. During the tour, I met an American, W.F. Wallace, Tex Wallace. And in our discussion, found out he was the test pilot of the airplane, that Claire's brother Herman was chief experimental mechanic. Oh, that's terrific. Small world, isn't it?
Out at Edwards Air Force Base at the time.
Terrific.
So just because you're friendly and you talk to people, you learn things.
And that's wonderful. So,
and then we were invited to his home. I had chicken tandoori. Oh, that was made the way they used to make. But when we were there, we were put up here.
Residency Guest House from the Garden, Bangalore, India, Thursday, February 14th, 1963.
Oh, that was gorgeous.
Very posh-looking place.
Well, it was. It was for the Governor General for Great Britain lived there. And when we were there for supper that night, we asked got friendly with the men that were waiting on us, and they told us that the Queen of England had just been there 2 weeks prior, and same quarters and same table. So, but and this was the British.
Old government buildings across the road from the new secretariat. It looks a bit like our the caserne, except with a temple in the middle of it.
We were invited to Martul's home. Oh, they were so gracious to us.
It's beautiful. Indians love flowers where water is available.
And here was his backyard.
Oh, look at that.
He was brought up in the farm, and these two little buildings here, they when they lived out in the country, they dug holes in the ground, and they had clay pots. They would burn wood in them or whatever, and heat those pots up, and then they would put the chicken on the pots, and oh, that was so delicious.
Thatched roofs, the little buildings.
Yeah. And oh, this is the new secretariat. Yeah, you know, they weren't particularly clean about the British, so they had their own. But this is the front porch. I got up that morning at sunup. Oh, it was gorgeous. And these women were out there sweeping some of the things that you went out of your way to see was...
It was worth it.
This is still Bangalore. This was another monolith. And here is Samba, the man that I keep... that I used to ride in with Carl with.
Shrine was located on top of Granite Mall as it was part of the city park. Gardens were beautiful. A man standing beside the monument was Samba Serati, S-E-R-A-T-H-I. That's very nice.
But anyway, well, I haven't talked too much on what we actually did, the plants. That's too much detail. But then here's Martula's invitation. We went to the Hindustan Machine Tool Company. They made some beautiful machinery. And then from there, our part of the team, we split somewhat one way, and the distances were far, but we went to Bombay, and by that time we had been on the road 13 or 14 days, and we were very, very tired, because we were getting up at 4 in the morning, and then some days eating at midnight, you know, and so that it, and they didn't observe Sundays as such. They worked 7 days a week, but one of the problems they were having is the people could take whatever time they want. So how does a foreman or manager handle his workforce? A man shows up or he doesn't show up at his own will, you know. So they were finding out that they had to go back to some of the British ways. And they tried to discontinue the English language. But there are so many dialects in India and so many religious sects. One doesn't understand the other, and oh shoot. But they were finding that they had to go back to the 7 day week, and they had to use the English for a universal language. So they gave in. But as we came into Bombay, we ran into an interesting situation. I am again in the last car that had all the suitcases, and on top of the pile, we had a large suitcase that probably held 2 cases of beer, see? So we come upon a checkpoint, an armed military men, fixed bayonets and everything. Anywhere at all, they had to have fixed bayonets, seems so. Well, anyway, the colonel talked to them, you know, and blah, blah, blah. I didn't understand what they were talking about. And so I asked the colonel, what's this all about? Prohibition, again. He says, you know, that suitcase there is prohibited, see? So again, that next morning we had to get permits from the police department and the security and have permits to have our beer and that sort of thing. But as we got in, as I say, it was a Saturday and we were dead tired. So we says, well, we've just made up our mind we're going to take a day off tomorrow. But in the meantime, we were, the Navy, their noses were out of joint because the Army was taking care of us. So we were invited to their British, they had one aircraft carrier. I think I have, here's my diploma again. Here it is, right here. The Admiral of the fleet. We were invited out to the
Saturday, February 16th, 1963. The flag officer commanding Indian fleet requests the pleasure of the company of Mr. Edward R. Mark. Boy, they're real formal.
Yeah.
At cocktails on board the INS
Vikrant.
Vikrant. V-I-K-R-A-N-T. Saturday, 16th, February 63 at 6:45 p.m. Dressed formal.
But we didn't. We didn't have formal clothes.
I was going to say.
We're traveling like we were.
I just couldn't quite see.
So we put up there.
Boat leaves at 6:30 from Gateway of India.
Yeah. And here's the hotel we put up at. That's the in the background. And this is the Gateway of India. And
in the rear of the Taj Mahal Hotel, that this gateway looks like some formal temple itself.
No, it's not. It's an art
like
the Arc de Triomphe in France,
yeah,
you know.
That's the kind of thing.
But when we went out to it, they see the harbor there is shallow, so the aircraft carrier couldn't come in. So they sent lighters in, and the sailors, you know, had a tent and the whole suit. It was formal as all get out. But we got out to the ship and visiting, and we sensed something was wrong. So I inquired, what's wrong here? What's wrong? Things aren't right. Well, it turned out the captain of the ship was retiring, and the crew had already planned a farewell party for him, and our party was interfering. So he says, oh, let's get out of here. This is no place for us. This is theirs. So they took us back to the officers' mess there, and then again, it comes midnight, and we hadn't eaten yet. So we went to a place, special place. They had it all lined up, but by the time we got there, it was closed. So we went to a different place. In the meantime, we had been told that in Bombay, you could probably drink water from the tap, which we did, and water tasted so good. But then the next morning, the whole gang, except me, got sick. Oh, you know what Delhi belly is. So that was all right. They got straightened out. But the next day, I was sick. So I had about 8 or 10 on my back instead of 1 on 8. But it was fun. Yeah. But anyway, see, here's the Vikrant out in the harbor, way out.
Oh, yes.
And here's that entry to India here. And then when I was there, I says, oh, what are we going to do? So we got a newspaper, horse races. I said, I didn't come to India to see bangtails running around the track. I says, I came to learn of India. So the colonel that, you know, rode with the suitcases and me says, Ed, how about coming with me tomorrow? I'd like to go see my brother who is here in Bombay, and I haven't seen him for a long time. And then we'll go see the hanging gardens in India, and we'll go up to Yuhu Beach, J-U-H-U Beach, up on the Bay of Bengal. So when we got to his brother's place, he was busy, couldn't see us. We got there again, anybody of any importance, they had these masonry walls around their houses, and at the gate had sentries and fixed bayonets. They like those fixed bayonets, seemed so. Well, anyway, we got there, and the butler says, oh, your brother is tied up and can't see you for a few hours. So then we went swimming, and then we, oh, the flower gardens. Wherever they had water, they had, oh, they loved flowers. Probably because they couldn't have them. But anyway, when we got back, his father, or his brother, was the chief of all security for the state of Bombay. Not just the city, the whole state. So that's the reason for the bayonets and all that sort of thing. But while we were there, Samba got me on the side and says, Ed, remember that night up in Calcutta? Said, yeah, yeah. Says, that black bag, you know? He was a comptroller for the Indian Army. And he said, then that black bag was all the money to pay the expenses on the trip. And he says, if I had lost that bag, I had lost my head.
I should think he might.
And so I could never get away from him. He was closer than a brother. Yeah, so then we here's my diplomas. And then the plants that we went to visit. And then we left there, and oh, not all of these. We went up to Ambernath, where they had set up a new plant. And on the way to the plant, these were some of the scenes here in native quarters.
A little shack.
Then this is
Ambernath, Ambernath.
And this is a picture of, it's not hay, that's cow dung that has been compressed. Anywhere in India, they had no fuel.
Fuel pile at the village near Ambernath.
Yeah. So I asked Samba, he says, how come they store it like this, Samba? And he says, Ed, you were brought up in a farm. Did you ever try to pick up a cow flop when it was raining? I said, well, no. I said, uh-oh. So they did this, and it was shed the water, see? And that one night coming down from Ishapur back to Calcutta, it was late in the afternoon, and along there they had great drainage ditches. And I said, what the heck do you have these for? The monsoon season. But every once in a while there'd be a depression in it, and there'd be a little, I call them frog ponds, you know. And that one time we saw, here's one woman, she's washing clothes in it. Here's another one that's drinking water from it. Here's a water buffalo in there wallowing, just his nose sticking out. Over across, here's a man peeing into the same water, see?
Terrific.
So, apparently they're immune to some of that stuff, but anyway, we learned so much. But then, we went back to New Delhi, and they says, you got to see the Taj Mahal, got to. I says, well, no, we are so tired, and it's about 100 some odd miles away. Go by train or go by taxi, it would be too tiring. So we'll take care of that. So they got the plane assigned to us again, because they had a military installation. They wanted to have a see down there. It was radio and communications. So we went there, and just at sunup, we got there over the Taj Mahal, and in that plane where it low, and he came in, and we could circle it, and then he turned around, and we circled it the other way around. To my taste, it's the most beautiful building in the world, bar none. We've been to some of the Orientals. They're gaudy, but this one has all the character. It's something, it's just remarkable.
And there it is, reflected in the pool.
Yeah.
It is just beautiful.
It is. You can't visualize it from a picture.
India.
You have to be there to, but then while we were there, they took us about 25 miles from Agra, where the Taj Mahal is located, to this old abandoned city. And somebody...
had to be abandoned because of a shortage of water.
Shortage of water. They never figured on water. And those buildings were so big, these stalls were for elephants. That gives you an idea of the size of them.
That would be pretty big.
But how could an engineer be that far off? And this is the living, the king's living quarters. It's part of it. You can't really do a job on it.
View the entry gate to the king's living quarters. To the left, the Taj Mahal. On the right was a similar building for visiting dignitaries. They really go in for elaborate buildings.
Oh, yes. Yes. Then, when we got back, we were to write up a report, part of which would be turned over to the Indians. And then part of it would be left in London when on our way back. And say our headquarters were at the embassy there in New Delhi. But the Indians were after us with so many questions and all that sort of thing that we just made up our minds we gotta leave because we aren't getting our own work taken care of. So this man that I call Samba, he was my shadow. No matter where I went, he was there. And that night, our plane left about 3 a.m. But he was in my room, and I was trying to pack, and we were chattering like magpies. And then we went out to the airport, and he went right up to the plane. I got a great big bear hug for him. That was worth the whole trip. So when we got back and turned in our report, it later came back to us that we had learned more about India than all the rest of the time we had been there before, because our embassy was so stiff and formal, they didn't learn anything. So, but then some of this stuff I haven't gotten to writing it up, but some of this stuff gives you an idea.
March 1963, March 27th, memorandum for the Secretary of the Army, subject report of the Defense Production Survey Team for India, headed by Mr. Carol Staley, STALEY.
Of course, everybody has to get in on the act, you know.
Expression of appreciation from Cyrus R. Vance. Letter of appreciation from Barksdale Hamlet, General United States Army, Acting Chief of Staff. Letter of appreciation from Lieutenant General F.S. Bessem, Jr. Letter of appreciation from Carol H. Staley himself, Team Chief, U.S. Army Munitions Command, Dover, New Jersey. Great pleasure for me to forward to you the recognition of the job well done, which has been given to our Defense Production Survey Team for India by the Deputy Assistant of Defense, Secretary of Army, Acting Chief of Staff of the Army, and Commanding General. Confident of this difficult assignment in the manner which has evoked such favorable comments would not have been possible without the zeal and the outstanding professional manner in which each member of the team performed. I wish to add my personal thanks for the wholehearted cooperation which you gave me throughout this assignment. It's very nice. May 1963.
So, then, I'm trying to remember what I did with some of this stuff. See, this is where, after that, I went over to the development branch. They say MARTAC wanted to get rid of me. I wouldn't give in. I knew some of this stuff, and it wouldn't come easy. So, the only opening they would offer me was 2 grades lower. I think they cut me back to 12 from a 14. But I had a retained rate for, I don't know, a year or two or whatever. It doesn't make any difference. But then now here's some of the organization of the factory branch. I've saved some of these.
Hill and Water Shops. Hill is Tremblay and Water Shops is Simon.
Oh, they had some excellent people there. But as like any big organization, there was a lot of deadwood, too, that were just riding their, you know, their seniority and their time. And these are the various departments. And, that's when I was detailed chief of the factory, and I don't know if...
Outstanding employee rating. This is by Medinas in 1960.
Never really talked with Medinas. He was always stuffy and formal. And it was during that time, one thing that galled me. They got all of a sudden very militaristic. They would sound the bugle, you know, and if you were crossing the yard, you had to stand at attention, face the bugle. He says, look, I was more, what should I say, conscious of these things than they ever were, so I wouldn't have. But then I'm looking for it. Shut that off for a minute. This is 1963. See, the types are all up here.
M14, M60, M73, M85, G3, AR15, SPIW and Alpha, the LPHA. Total direct labor operations in-house and subcontracted. Total number of components manufactured in-house and manufactured outside. Total number of assemblies and subs in-house, outside. Direct labor operations on receiver. Number of process gauges. October 30th, 1963.
Then we serial numbered the various weapons, and these were the starting numbers for the various...
Number of machinery operations on receiver, M14, 121, M60, 199, M73, 208, M85, 203, G3 CETME, 75, AR15, 60, SPIW is blank, and Alpha 112.
That might help you in some of your armory